All right, welcome back to Destination 2026, Houston's Countdown to the Cup. It's brought to you by Aramco, Coca-Cola Southwest, Houston Methodist, Reliant Quanta, Visit Sugarland, and Rice. We're winding down after the World Cup, and we are pleased to be joined now by former U.S. men's national team player, covered the World Cup and has covered numerous World Cups as a commentator. He is Marcelo Balboa. He joins us now. Marcelo, how are you?
I'm good, bro. I want to have my own theme song. Like when they announce you, I've been thinking about that all World Cup. You do so many interviews. I feel like I need a theme song. Like when, you know, Captain America walks out, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but
I gotta find one
Andre
for next time.
Andre 2000. What was that?
Next time. I was told it's Andre 3000 now. So yeah, I'm confused.
I get that wrong all the time, but
me
I remember.
Too.
All right. Just general thoughts on the World Cup overall.
Listen, I think that we knew what we were expecting, right? 48 teams, more games. I think everything that FIFA wanted, they hit it out of the park. Full stadiums, highest attended World Cup, most viewed. You know, when you can draw over 30 million people to watch the United States play, that's a great World Cup. I think that overall, the experience for the fans was awesome. Because of the fact of how they all integrated together and partied and enjoyed each other's culture. I enjoyed the fact that a lot of people came to this country and says, this isn't what we were told this would be like. A lot of the players talked about the facilities and the stadiums, how wonderful they were in the United States. So I think in a bigger picture, I think FIFA and, you know, Mexico, United States, and Canada did a great job of hosting the World Cup. On the playing side, I thought, and I've heard a lot of people say the same thing, that the games were okay. There were some really good games, and there were some really boring games. But overall, Glenn, I thought a great month for me. I've kind of been lost the last 3 or 4 days since there's no games anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's kind of strange being so inundated in it. And I know you like the research part of it too. You know, prepping for it and all the things that we find out about the Cabo Verdes and the Curaçaos.
Yeah. I got to be honest, this World Cup is probably my hardest World Cup, because when I'm an analyst and I do a game, I know both teams, their players, their backgrounds. You do all that research, you know, hours and hours on end. But when you're doing a general kind of show, where you're doing four games in a day, you've got to be versed a little bit different on all different countries. So a little bit more homework, a little bit more studying. And it was quite challenging, which I kind of liked, to be honest with you, because I didn't know much about Haiti. Even though they're in CONCACAF, we don't see them that much. But I got to know about Cape Verde, you know what I mean, Curaçao, and some of the players that are on there. So you know what? It was a good World Cup, just because it was different for me, not as an analyst, but as a studio guy who you have to kind of have knowledge on a little bit on everything.
Just a reminder, Marcelo worked for CBS, right?
Yep.
On this World Cup, as an analyst, as always. He has also played in numerous World Cups and has called them as well as a commentator in stadium. Okay, so let's just talk a little bit about Spain and all the beauty of how they won this tournament. Pretty remarkable to pretty much suffocate France and then Argentina. Talk a little bit about Spain and what you liked about them.
Listen, when you play proper football, that's what it looks like. You control the tempo of the game. You don't allow the other team to hit their best players or let them feel comfortable on the ball. Anytime Argentina got the ball, you had a Spaniard on him, closing him down, putting pressure on him. When you can take a team like Argentina and put them on their heels for 120 minutes, Glenn, zero shots. At the end of the last 15 minutes of overtime, they finally got a shot on target. You eliminate the spaces Argentina likes to play. You didn't allow Messi. Every time Messi got the ball, he got fouled, which was smart. Breaking the rhythm, don't allow him to attack the spaces. They frustrated Enzo. Enzo took a second yellow card, which made it a little easier for Spain. So I think everything you wanted to see from Spain, you saw. And it was, you know, it was a slow grind. It was a Capo Verde. It kind of just grew and grew. And I think you saw the best of France against, again, or best of Spain against France. That was a great game. And then what they did to Argentina, not a lot of teams can do to slow down that attack they have with Julián and Messi. So listen, there's no doubt in my mind they're the best team in the world. They put you in a box, they shut the doors, and they suffocated you. And that's what they did to Argentina. They just took the breath out of Argentina. So full credit, full credit. I wish it would have been a better game. I think we all would have wished it would have been a better game. We would have seen Argentina play a little bit better, but they were not allowed to play because Spain did what we thought they could do. You know what I mean?
Pretty remarkable. Well, obviously you have Argentine background, so yeah, your heart got pulled a little bit in this one, right?
You know what? I was a bit sad. I'm not gonna lie. Listen, my heart got broken when the US got knocked out against Belgium. That crushed me because 4-1 was not an accurate result of what that was with two big mistakes at the end. But to see this World Cup, and I know Neymar's still gonna play, but it breaks your heart to see guys who have carried this sport for the last 20 years in their last phase, or maybe their last World Cup game, the Modrics of the world. You know what I mean? You just look at the Ronaldos, the Messis, and you can keep going down the list of guys that may not make it back for the next World Cup. But man, it sure was a fun month to watch, to talk soccer, breathe soccer, live soccer, everything that that we love and have in our lives, you know what I mean? So, but yeah, I was heartbroken when I couldn't even call my mom and dad because I knew if I called my mom and dad, they would be in tears. They'd be in tears of how Argentina lost the final. But I think that and then again, the sad part is people and what Paredes did and what happened at the end of the game, you know what I mean? It's a shame. I'll tell you that it's a shame, but I don't think people realize when you lose a game, you're already emotionally pissed. And then all it takes is one guy to run by you and say something stupid. You know what I mean? In a game like that. And I can guarantee you that somebody said something, and that's why that brawl started. So I don't condone it, but I understand it because I've been in those games, not in a World Cup final, but I've been in tournaments where we lose in the final, Gold Cup. I know, I mean, when you play Liga MX, you're fighting for relegation, and so I just wish that wasn't the last image we would have saw the World Cup.
Yeah, I think for everybody, I think that's a really, really good point. No question about it. I was also very impressed with the focus overall of Spain and their, and I think this is a power to have, which was their emotional control too.
Yeah, listen, when you control the game the way they do, their emotions, they never went down a goal. You know what I mean? Belgium's the only team that scored on them. So they never had that emotional high and low. We're losing, we need to get back in it. Argentina did. You go back and see how many games they were winning, losing, tied. They're down against England. So the mentality that the Spaniards have to never panic, to play their style, no matter what. No matter what, I can guarantee you, Glenn, if they would have been losing 1-0, their mentality wouldn't have changed. The style of play wouldn't have changed. They would have stuck, and they do. They stick to their principles. And their principles are on the ball, constantly moving the ball, waiting to find that space where they can penetrate. So I think you got to give the Spain and the coaching staff and everybody there lots of credit because the mentality of these players is absolutely fantastic.
And the, we've all been in games where we've had a ball at our feet and we're getting put under pressure and we don't have options. I
No.
just looked in that game and I'm just like, I just watched Rodri for a while. And
Yeah.
I just looked at positionally how these guys played and how
Yeah.
every guy who was on the ball always had an
Yeah.
amazing.
Listen, the only thing I have about Rodri is I think everybody's talking about winning the best player of the World Cup. I thought that was kind of odd. You know what I mean? But to have a captain like, so we didn't think he was going to come back, right? From the ACL, from the injury, he came back. He wasn't the same guy. But I tell you what, it just goes to show you what a leader he is. You know what I mean? The respect the players in Spain have with him. So he did a great job. He dictated. When he had to lay a tackle, he laid a tackle. He always had his team organized. He always had an outlet for him, and he was an outlet for other people. So listen, I don't know. I guess I look at this team and I say, when you look at Yamal and you say, man, he didn't have a great World Cup because he's coming back off an injury. We really didn't see the best of him. And that team still won. They won without their best player and Williams not being on the field either.
Nico Williams, yeah.
So yeah, so I look at that and I say, man, this team is for real, man. That's a good example of how you play. There's two ways of playing, Glenn. You can either be patient with the ball and you do what Spain does, or you're very dynamic and you're very explosive like France and you go after teams. You don't wait, you get it and you quickly counter and you quickly hit them in transition and you catch them on their heels. So I think in this World Cup, Spain had the right, we'll say, tactics, had the right formula, and had the right mentality to grind out all these games.
Yeah, and you know what? When they won the Euros, Nico Williams and Lamine Yamal were so important. And now you really make a great point that they did this with guys recovering from injury. And of course, Nico Williams nodded back the ball to Ferran Torres.
No, but that's where
Boy.
we thought. Listen, but that's where everybody thought maybe Spain isn't going to be the same. I mean, we were talking about earlier, can Spain win it without Yamal being 100%, without Nico Williams being 100%? Because in the Euros, they were flying, man.
Oh,
They were
yeah.
running and gunning, and they were gunning, and they were at their best, and they were like, man, these guys are unstoppable. So when they came into this World Cup with both of them hurt, you think to yourself, okay, can Spain really win it without those two guys? And you know what? They did, man, and they did it in a very classy way.
The collective went out. And I'll still make an argument that Lamine Yamal was very influential because of simply being on the field.
Listen, Glenn, if I'm a center back and he's on the field, he's still not 100%, I can guarantee you my eyeball's looking over to the left 90% of the time because I'm looking at the field, I'm looking to see where he's at. And as soon as he gets the ball, you've got to slide two guys over. Have to. And you saw Argentina do it. They slid a second guy, they slid a third guy in there, but it doesn't slide over. So, yeah, man, even though he's not 100%, you got to keep an eye on him because all it takes is one. And you know, in a World Cup, one mistake can cost you. And look at Argentina. One mistake on a set on that cross, the head back from Nico, goal, and now all of a sudden you're chasing the game. So
Marcelo Balboa joining us. He's played in three World Cups. He's also called him as a commentator, heavily involved in the game, has also done a tremendous amount of youth development work with the Colorado Rapids and others. Okay, so all of a sudden, this moniker, pay to play and access for all, is being shouted from the mountaintops. Nobody seems to offer any solutions, but everybody's using these slogans now. Do you really think, and I know what my opinion is on this, but do you really think we have a problem with access to soccer in the United States?
And man, listen, I was talking to some buddies of mine who have kids who play travel baseball. I have friends who have kids who play Pop Warner football. Okay. I have friends who their daughters are cheerleaders. And do you know the money they spend? Do you know the money they spend on these travel teams and baseball and football and cheerleading? So listen, I think it's great that we're pushing this pay for play. We're gonna fix it. Landon Donovan's one of the key guys that keeps talking about it, but it's funny because I've never heard a solution from anybody. I haven't heard a solution from anybody. And then
They're
it's
selling
funny
us things
because
we knew 15 years ago.
we knew 30 years ago, Glenn. We knew 30 years ago. You know what I mean? And
Your
these are people.
father coaching youth knew about this.
Listen. Every sport is going to cost you an arm and a leg. Okay. People have found out that you can make a living off being a director of a club or the director of the boys, director of the girls, which they're well-deserved salaries because they have to do a lot of work. So I'm just tired of hearing the problem. Listen, I don't talk about it because I really don't have a solution. But you know, I do listen. I saw an article the other day, and I'll send it to you on my thing. And it really breaks down what goes on in England, what goes on in Germany, and you kind of laugh and you say, "Oh, so we're not that really that far distantly." The only difference is when there's a kid at 12 or 13, and he's potentially the best kid on that area. The first thing they do is either Man City, Man U, whatever team in their town, they go and hand pick them and bring them, like we do in the academies, and they don't pay, right? So not every kid's going to be a pro, not every kid's going to have an opportunity to live a life that a lot of these people get to live. So how do we find a solution? You know what I mean? That's the question. We can talk about the problem all day. Yes, pay for play sucks. We've known about this 30 years, and now all of a sudden, you know what I mean? And here's my problem with all of this too, is every coach that coaches at an academy level eventually wants to be a pro coach, right? They want to go to MLS Next Pro. They want to go to MLS. They want to go to USL. Everybody that I've known, except for myself, because I've never had expectations to be a pro coach. I liked coaching the 14s, and I was in a great place. I loved coaching them. I wasn't looking to be a pro. But every coach out there right now that is at an academy level, we'll say, or at an ECNL level, they all want to move up. They want to move up into college, USL. They want to move up into MLS Next Pro. They want to be a pro coach. So, are they doing what's best all the time for the kids, or are they doing what's best for them? That's what you have to look at. If I ran an academy, all of my coaches would be ex-pros. You know what I mean? Ex-pros that have been there, done that, and just want to help the kids. I would pay them enough of a salary, Glenn, where the better coaches are here to stay, and they're going to be here 10 years developing these kids. So we have a system in place from the 12s to the 14s, the 16s, the 18s. So that way you have consistency and you have a guy who's been there, who's done that. So yeah, I'll go with we should probably have better coaches that don't have that expectation of wanting to be pro in 5 years. But again, good luck finding guys that don't want to be a pro coach or don't want to be on a pro staff.
Yeah. Marcelo Balboa, three World Cups. We're talking to him about everything in the World Cup. Well, last thing before I kind of let you go. And by the way, on the access to all, when I heard everybody shouting access for all, I said to myself, this seems to be a slogan. I hear this everywhere. Well, I did a little bit of research on the amount of nonprofits that are in inner cities in this country. And there's a lot of them that offer free opportunity for soccer. Now, what I think needs to be done is I think we have to do a deep dive on these nonprofits, find out who's running them, how are they funded, how many kids do they have, are they growing with the amount of kids, and are they marketing and really pushing that this program is available? But I think we need to do a deep dive on that because
Glenn,
I'm
here's the
biased
problem.
saying we don't have access to the game.
Glenn, the problem's not that we're not developing these kids. What people don't understand sometimes is when you go anywhere else in the world, when you're born, you have a soccer ball at your feet in
Yeah, that's your
Argentina, in
access to
Germany,
the game
Brazil.
right there.
Yeah, but I'm saying anywhere else in the world, you have a soccer ball. When I was born, I had a soccer ball at my feet. My dad's got pictures of it. Okay, now we're talking about the United States. Okay, we're not there yet because you know why? Because even to this day, I used to play soccer with my kids. And when my kids were to go to their friend's house, the first thing dad would do is, because he didn't know soccer, he'd put a baseball in his hand or a football, got him into football, got
Yep.
him into basketball. So until we get to a point where soccer is the number one sport, please don't tell me that, oh, if we took our best athletes, we'd be the best in the world. That's not true. That's not true.
That's just ignorant now.
No, but listen, Glenn, when you were born, your dad already has what his passion is. It could be football, it could be basketball. So your dad's going to push you in that direction, or your mom, either or. If it's a little boy, if it's a little girl, it's the same thing. In this country, we are naturally eye-hand coordination. We have the best baseball league in the world, do we not? We have the NFL. There's only one NFL in this world. The NBA. There's no one that can compete with the NBA. You go to Argentina, it's River Plate, it's Boca Independiente. You go to England, it's Manchester United. And I'm talking history of hundreds of years of grandfather to grandfather, great grandfather, all played soccer. We don't have that history yet. And 30 years from now, our generation, my kids' generation, their generation, we'll probably catch up to that. Now we're talking about being born and your dad's pushing you to soccer because that's what he plays, that's what he watches every day. We're not at that point yet.
I think a lot of people that want to weigh in on soccer, and I'm glad they do because I think it's important for everybody to be talking about it. But I think a lot of people don't do the homework and the education and understand that we have three other traditional sports, to your point.
100%.
These are true soccer cultures. When you're talking about England and you're talking about Argentina, and it's very, very different. And you have to have an understanding of that context before you start deciding you know what's right and what's wrong.
When I was a kid, my dad, when we were back in Argentina, my dad took us to his old neighborhood. And we played a pickup game in between two buildings on dirt with a little plastic ball that was taped. And my dad's like, they invited us to play. We went and played. At 10 years old, 11 years old, we were playing in an area where you're just like, this is what it's about. Where do you see that in the US? You know, we don't have that culture yet. You know what I'm saying? We're getting there. And the culture from 90, 94, 98, 2002, it's gotten so much better. But we're not at a point where you can say that my dad and my dad great 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 grandfather was a soccer. When we get to that point, you're going to see a huge change in this country. But I think, you know, to be honest with you, I think we're doing a great job. We're developing players that are playing in top leagues all over the world. So maybe it didn't come together against Belgium, but you know what? The process from 94 till now, it shows that it's working. Now the problem is we got to start looking at how do we keep growing? You know what I mean? We need soccer people in soccer positions for me.
That's a good one to end on, Marcelo Balboa. Marcelo, as always, thanks very much. I look forward to catching up with you in person at some point, as opposed to doing interviews like this. Thanks so much. Thanks so
Take
much
what you can
for
get,
coming.
but take what we can get right now.
That's right. That's right. Thanks for coming on, as always, Marcelo. By the
Anytime,
way,
brother.
I'll tell you the same thing I told Tab. I said, you know, I always appreciate you always say yes to coming on the show and
Oh, yeah.
talking soccer. You give me and my listeners your time. So I just want you to know you will be remembered in my will.
Buddy, you are family. You never have to ask twice.
Thanks, Marcelo. Have a good
Later,
one.
bro.
All right, that does it for this segment. Let's take a break here at Soccer Matters. No, it isn't. It's Destination 2026, Houston's countdown to the cup on your soccer football station in Houston, ESPN 97.5.